Welcome to our study of April 9th, 2024. The time is 17:05 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green with you again today for the study, this time part two of the Crucible article called also El Crisol de la Credo Creíble in Spanish, the Crucible of Credible Creed. Chapter 10 is the beginning of part 2, which is the chapter concerning Moses. And before we begin, I'd like to show you this interesting alignment between the kingdoms of Assyria and Egypt, as well as between the Kassite king Burnaburiash and Egypt, which we will find later in this chapter 10 under the table. Table 4, Kings of Assyria and Babylon, and the Babylonian kings. This Kassite king, Burnaburiash II, was the Kassite king mentioned there, and he reigned at the time of Ashurbanipal I, which in our chronology is about 1370 for Burnaburiash, and also 1374 for Ashurbanipal I. Babylonian and Assyrian kings, respectively, and that's just a few decades after the time of, well, just about two decades after, well, it's a century plus two decades after the Exodus, but two decades and a half, or three decades and a half after the beginning of the reign of the Egyptian king, Amenhotep III, who began in 1405, because the years count backwards in BCE years, of course. But when we look to this paragraph, or the text below, there are several paragraphs below the table of these kings in chapter 10. When we look to this text, we see a reference to this king Ashurbanipal I, who had correspondence with Egypt and appeared before Pharaoh Tutankhamun, to which very diplomatic mission, I write, the Kassite king Burnaburiash strongly objected. And that's a very valuable time correlation between the different kingdoms. So we use that in our genealogy. The chapter 10 now is called Moses, Copyist of Letters, and the theme scripture for it is from Proverbs 12 and 9 of the 1984 New World Translation, which says, "Better is the one lightly esteemed, but having a servant, than the one glorifying himself, but in want of bread." And there's a wonderful painting here by Philippe de Champagne, from 1648, showing Moses with the Ten Commandments, a painting that resided at the time of this writing in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg. On Moses, or on any writer, there are two things to consider. First, his writing. Secondly, the man and his actual life. Genesis begins with the Hebrew word Bereshit. Genesis, or Bereshit as it is called, is the first of the five books of the Torah, or Jewish biblical law of Moses. We know them as five books in the present-day Protestant version, which we are using and which are present in many of the other versions available today. The Torah is often, or always, in fact, probably always in five separate books. In the Jewish commentary, Midrash, Devarim Rabbah 9:4, we read that, quote, "Before his death, Moses wrote 13 Torah scrolls." So there were scrolls at the time of Moses, not books, and there were 13 scrolls, which later became the five books. The Torah has exactly 304,804 letters, some 79,000 words. Of these 304,805 letters, there exist 9 letter variations to do with spelling only. and for the Yemenite Torah only. In the Christian Bible, the Torah is situated at the head. The beginning, in other words. Remember, in the beginning, Jehovah made the heavens and the earth. This letter B that begins the word Bereshit, I'm trying to see if I know what the word Resh means. Resh means king often, but in at least in some languages, maybe not Hebrew, but the word B, the letter B, I believe that's the word for in Hebrew. So in the beginning, it says in Genesis, it starts with the words in the beginning. And this letter B is a preposition, I believe, in Hebrew. So that's where that in the beginning comes from. But they often, in fact, for the first five books, each book has a name corresponding to the first word of that book in the Hebrew language. And it's amazing, isn't it, that there are only nine letter variations in all of the five books of Moses? Only nine variations in total? Nine times? There's a deviation in some of the letters? Only to do with spelling, not to do with anything meaningful? Isn't that unbelievably perfect? It's so perfect. Write down for yourself in the Christian Bible, Jehovah went on to say to Moses, these words, then Moses wrote this law. Moses finished writing the words of this law to the last one in a book. We see that in Deuteronomy 31 and 9. And also, unfortunately, my link, the links are broken here. Also in the article, which I don't know when I ever noticed that. They're just not working, functioning. They're not broken by the address, they're broken by not functioning, so there's something wrong with the HTML. But if we look here also at Deuteronomy 31:24, I believe it refers to Moses being the writer, too, of the books that we consider him to have written. And it mentions this in the last book of the first five, which is Deuteronomy. The five books of Moses are Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So Moses was told by Yahweh to write this law. Those leaving the law praise the wicked, but those who are keeping the law excite themselves against them. That's from Proverbs. The problem with any theories about ages long past is that it is difficult to assess the validity of any such theory about ages long past. Enter the crucible, a way to test the facts by chronology. And what sort of chronology do these, quote, modern scholars, unquote, put up? The fact is, no chronology of any time, modern or ancient, has come close enough to give it much serious credibility. That is, to give the chronology that is put up much serious credibility. Without a chronology, there is no vessel to hold the facts, and thus no way to ascertain whether these facts are true. Without a chronology, ancient history is simply a hoard of facts that may or may not fit a particular place and time. Without a chronology, the brain abandons all of the facts. Then it comes up with a theory that is more to its liking. As with a crucible, a leaky theory causes all of the facts to spill out, which are contained by the right chronology. So the argument goes something like this. If I could make a strong enough case for Moses, then he wrote the said book. It's like a legal case where the evidence presented meets the requirement of place and time. Or so we here maintain. We maintain that expert testimony is not enough to provide the necessary facts unless a sound chronology is in place. When someone can state when and where Moses lived, and the document bearing his name fits the associated facts of the time and place, then a case is made for Moses as a writer. the preaching of this gospel has been established legally. That's from, see the footnotes 8 and 9, Philippians 1 and 7, the legal establishment of the good news. There's more evidence of Moses as the writer of the Torah than evidence of any other writer, because the manuscripts of the Bible number in the thousands compared to a few or perhaps dozens of manuscripts available of any other work. Rather than being seduced by the intellectual arguments of misquoted modern scholars, let us consider the key reason. Were we to consider the argument of a critic, we would, out of fairness, have the need to consider all other arguments. Since we obviously cannot do that, we turn instead to the origin of the language itself, and thanks to Joe Lanyadu. That's the end of our study for today, little one. It's going to get interesting when we start to consider and study the language according to some interesting thoughts and facts that are presented by Joe Lanyadu, which are really astonishing. Before we turn to our Chronicles and the book of Haggai, by the way, Haggai is the 37th book of the Bible. We're down, it's the 37th book, is that right? Or is it the 36th, Haggai? It's the 37th book of the Bible, followed by it's Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, there are only two more books after Haggai. That's Zechariah and Malachi, and then we're finished our study of the Old Testament. Isn't that great news, and isn't that profoundly impressive that we've covered that much? I think it's really quite something that we've done that so quickly. So that reference to Philippians, I'd like to check that. I'd like to check it out. Philippians 1 and 7. It's been a while since I looked at that. It is altogether right. There he says, in the defending and legally establishing of the good news. Paul writing to the Philippians, chapter 1, verse 7, that's where that was from. So the legally establishing of the good news is something that had been done even in Paul's time. It was established as being legal to preach the good news. Certainly an important point. Before we begin 2 Chronicles 31, oh, you know what I forgot to do? Forgot to bring this in line. Let's take a look at this again. Here it is. So chapter 10 of Moses. Moses with the Ten Commandments. Chapter 10, Moses, copyist of letters. And let's just scroll through it. Briefly, so that if anyone wants to do a screen capture, they might be able to do that. Right. There we are. Okay. So, I want to be able to make sure that someone can see all of the text. All right. So, before we do begin 31 of chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, isn't it remarkable? We're up to book 37. I'm quite amazed. There it is. Haggai, book 37. Right? 4 times 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times 4 is 36 plus 1 is 37. And we have two more, 38 and 39. There are 39 books in the Protestant Old Testament. That's what we'll be finishing when we finish the book of Malachi. Our proverb for today, little children, is next on the list of things we're considering. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. little children. Here it is. An answer when gentle puts anger away, while hard words engender a wrathful display. The tongue of the wise seeks with inkling adorn, but fools issue nonsense as if it were sworn. That's the end of our study of Proverbs today, the daily proverb from Proverbs 15, verses 1 and 2, from the Word Green version, version 2004, when that was translated. Different parts are translated at different times in the Word Green version, or they were revised later. That's why the dates are different. And as soon as they finished all this, 2 Chronicles 31, that is the big celebration of that Passover in year 1 of Hezekiah, all the Israelites that were found there went out to the cities of Judah, and they proceeded to break up the sacred pillars and cut down the sacred poles and pull down the high places and the altars out of all Judah and Benjamin and in Ephraim and Manasseh until they had finished, after which all the sons of Israel returned to their cities, each one to his own possession. And Hezekiah then set the divisions of the priests and of the Levites in their divisions, each one according in accordance with its service for the priests and for the Levites. As regards the burnt offering and the communion sacrifices to minister and to give thanks and praise in the gates of the camps of Yahweh, and there was a portion of the king from his own goods for the burnt offerings, for the burnt offerings of the morning and the evening, and also the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths, and for the new moons, and for the festival seasons, according to what is written in the law of Jehovah. Furthermore, he said to the people, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, to give the portion of the priests and of the Levites in order that they might adhere strictly to the law of Yahweh. I want to say something about the importance of calcium in the diet. So maybe we'll get to that. As soon as the word broke forth, the sons of Israel increased the first fruits of the grain, new wine, and oil, and honey, and all the produce of the field, and the tenth of everything they brought in abundantly. And the sons of Israel and of Judah that were dwelling in the cities of Judah, even they themselves brought in the tenth of cattle and sheep and the tenth of the holy things, the things sanctified, to Yahweh their God. They brought in and so gave heaps upon heaps. In the third month they started the heaps by laying the lowest layer, and in the seventh month they finished. When Hezekiah and the princes came and saw the heaps, they proceeded to bless Jehovah and his people Israel. That's the end of verse 8. About calcium, I realized when I was thinking about what does calcium do in the brain. Well, calcium, one of its many functions is to make the heart beat. But the way in which it makes the heart beat is that it causes the nerve to fire. Every nerve in the body is caused to fire by calcium. So that's why the heart beats, because of calcium. But also, all brain function, therefore, which is made up of nerve cells that must fire in order for you or anyone else to think. The nerve cells in the brain must be fired, and that is done by calcium. Therefore, when we're, and it's like, okay, I remember the first time I ever took a calcium supplement when I was dying, basically, without knowing what was wrong with me. Slow death, right? But it's like when the lights come on. It's like a house that's dark, and then somebody, there's a power outage, a city that's dark, and there's a power outage because of the outage, the city's dark. And then somebody, turns on the power, all the lights come on. That's what it's like when calcium is provided to the brain after it was deficient in calcium. It's like the lights come on because all the nerves in the brain start to fire. And so, even a moderate deficiency of calcium can cause, and well, definitely does cause, a failure of proper brain function. So it's not simply, that it takes away the pain of arthritis, which it does. And I also figured out why it takes away the pain of arthritis. It's easy to see. We know the pain is caused when the nerve is interrupted, right? When you cut through the nerve, pain is caused because the nerve signal is interrupted. So the pain of arthritis, at least in the case of the arthritis caused by calcium deficiency, when it's first beginning, that pain is because the nerves can't fire. And so there's pain. There's a deficiency of calcium in the area, in the locality or the region of the joints, right? Let's say in your finger. When there's not enough calcium in the joint of the finger, the nerves cannot fire. When a nerve cannot fire, can't transmit information to the brain receives that lack of information as pain, right? It says there's a problem there. I'm not getting any signal. It comes back as a pain. And as soon as you take calcium, almost within seconds, you're going to see and feel, you're going to understand and feel much better. You'll understand what caused it because you'll feel better as the calcium restores the firing of that nerve. All the nerves in the body depend on calcium, you see. In time, okay, Hezekiah inquired of the priests and the Levites concerning the heaps. Then Azariah, the chief priest of the house of Zadok, said to him, yes, he said, from the time they started to bring the contribution into the house of Jehovah, there has been an eating and getting satisfied and having a surplus in abundance. Let's focus back on the chapter. And for Jehovah himself has blessed his people, and what has been left over is this great plenty. Right, so they brought in a great deal. At this, Hezekiah said to prepare dining rooms in the house of Yahweh. Accordingly, they prepared them, and they kept bringing in the contribution and the tenth and the holy things in faithfulness. And Conaniah the Levite was in charge of them as leader, and Shimei his brother was second, and Jehiel and Azaziah and Nahath and Asahel and Jeremoth and Jozabad and Eliel and Ismachiah and Mahath and Benaiah were commissioners at the side of Conaniah and Shimei his brother by the order of Hezekiah the king. And Azariah was the leading one of the house of the true God. And Koreh, the son of Imnah, the Levite, was the gatekeeper to the east, in charge of the voluntary offerings of the true God, to give Yahweh's contribution and the most holy things. And under his control there were Eden and Meniamin and Jeshua and Shemaiah, Amariah and Shechaniah, in the cities of the priests, in office of trust, to give to their brothers in the divisions, equally, to great and small, apart from their genealogical enrollment of the males, from 3 years of age upward, of all those coming to the house of Jehovah, as a daily matter of course, for their service by their obligations, according to their divisions. This is the genealogical enrollment of the priests by the house of their fathers. That shouldn't be too hard to say, but it's a big word. This is the genealogical enrollment of the priests by the house of their fathers, and also of the Levites, from the age of 20 years upward by their obligations in their divisions, both for the genealogical enrollment among all their little ones, their wives and their sons and their daughters, for all the congregation, because in their office of trust they proceeded to sanctify themselves for what was holy, and for the sons of Aaron, the priests, in the fields of pasture ground of their cities. In all the different cities there were men that had been designated by their names to give portions to every male among the priests and to the entire genealogical enrollment. There's that word again, to the entire genealogical enrollment among the Levites. You see, they were all enrolled genealogically. It's important to have a genealogy. It was for them, it is for us, because it helps us with chronology, but it was for them because they needed to know if he was really a Levite. Was he really, or was he really of the priestly house of Aaron? Also, they needed to know what the ancestry was of each of these people so that they could assess whether they were in fact, and verify whether they were in fact of that tribe. And Hezekiah proceeded to do like this in all Judah, and he continued to do what was good and right and faithful before Jehovah his God, and in every work that he started in the service of the house of the true God, and in the law, and in the commandment to search for his God. It was with all his heart that he acted, and he proved successful. So I can tell you that brain function makes a difference. I can tell you that. And I can tell you that calcium makes a huge difference to brain function. Immense. We're at the book of Haggai chapter 1 finally. It's the 37th book in the Protestant Hebrew Bible. in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, and this is Darius the son of Hystaspes. Hystaspes was his father, this king Darius. He was known as Darius the Great. We know from the context of the other Bible verses throughout the books of the Old Testament that this king Darius was not the same as Darius the Mede, nor was he the same as the man called Darius the son of Ahasuerus. This was Darius the son of Hystaspes, who was called Darius the Great, who began to rule in the year 522 BCE. In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month on the first day of the month, the word of Jehovah occurred by means of Haggai, the prophet, to Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and to Joshua the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, saying the following. But Zerubbabel and Jeshua, the son of Jehozadak, Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, along with Jeshua, were those who had returned after Cyrus released the Jews from their captivity in Babylon. Okay, they returned from Babylon, Zerubbabel and Jeshua, to restore the service at the temple shortly after the capture of Babylon by Cyrus, the great Persian king. And this is what the words were of Haggai the prophet to Zerubbabel and Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, Zerubbabel being the son of Shealtiel. Haggai said, "This is what Jehovah of armies has said. As regards this people, they have said the time has not come, the time of the house of Yahweh, for it to be built." And the word of Jehovah continued to come by means of Haggai the prophet, saying, "Is it the time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses, while this house is waste?" And now this is what Jehovah of armies has said. "Set your heart upon your ways. You have sown much seed, but there is a bringing of little in. There is an eating, but it is not to satisfaction. There is a drinking, but not to the point of getting intoxicated. There is a putting on of clothes, but it is not with anyone's getting warm. And he that is hiring himself out is hiring himself out for a bag having holes." This is what Jehovah of armies has said. Also called Jehovah the God of armies, or Yahweh the God of armies. He said, "Set your heart upon your ways. Go up to the mountain, and you must bring in lumber and build the house, that I may take pleasure in it and I may be glorified," Jehovah has said. "There was a looking for much, but here there was just a little, and you have brought it into the house, and I blew upon it. For what reason is the utterance of Yahweh of armies? By reason of my house that is waste, while you are on the run, each one in behalf of his own house. Therefore over you the heavens kept back their dew, and the earth itself kept back its yield. And I kept calling for dryness upon the earth, and upon the mountains, and upon the grain, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon what the ground would bring forth, and upon earthling man, and upon domestic animal, and upon all the toil of the hands. And Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and all the remaining ones of the people, began to listen to the voice of Yahweh their God, and to the words of Haggai the prophet, as Jehovah their God had sent him. And the people began to fear because of Jehovah. And Haggai the messenger of Jehovah went on to say to the people, according to the messenger's commission from Yahweh, saying, "I am with you, people, is the utterance of Yahweh." And Yahweh proceeded to rouse up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah. He was sent as the leader of the group of Israelites who returned to rebuild the temple and to restore the service of the temple at Jerusalem, to restore the Israelite presence at Jerusalem. He became the governor because he was the leader. And the spirit, but he was the governor under the rulership of Cyrus, who was the king, of course. And the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, Jehovah also roused up, and the spirit of all the remaining ones of the people. And they began to enter in and to do the work in the house of Yahweh of armies, their God. It was on the 24th day of the sixth month in the second year of Darius the king. And we saw it was on the first day of the month in the second year in the sixth month that the book began. The chapter 1 of Haggai began. And now it's the 24th day of the sixth month in the second year of Darius. So, 24 days inclusive have elapsed here during the time of this chapter 1. That's all for the reading for today. We're down to the last couple of minutes here in our study. So calcium, it fires the brain up, like it just like it fires the whole body up. And when I started taking coral calcium in about 1999, when I realized that I was sick for so long with chronic fatigue syndrome, and I knew that I needed something, and I saw these late night ads about calcium by Bob Barefoot, and he wrote a book with the late Carl Reich called posthumous work by him, I guess, but it was called The Calcium Factor, published around that time, either published in 1999 or maybe 2000 or 2001, I forget the date. Well, it's right here. Here it is. It's a minute. I have it right here. So it's The Calcium Factor. It's a great book. And it's not like any other book you've ever read about nutrition. 2002, this particular copy. Right. So, yeah. I bought that, I think, at a bookstore somewhere. But that's all for our study just about. Well, I've got another minute. So let me... Yeah, it's a fantastic book. But when I started taking the calcium, it really was like the lights came on. I saw, like, all the colors seemed more vivid, you know, in my, you know, vision. And everything was... I could feel, like, when I went out in the sun, my feet got... The blood flow in my feet increased. And it was like they turned red without being sunburned. You know, it was just that they turned red because the blood was flowing in my feet. And I'd never felt that, I don't think, ever before. I'd probably been deficient in calcium since I was in my teens, like 18 or even younger. And I just had a problem with... Now, when you take calcium, okay, I had a problem with being deficient because I couldn't take calcium because I would get constipated. And the reason for that is because I didn't know about magnesium either. So you always take calcium with magnesium and with vitamin D and with vitamin K2, as I recently learned you have to do. And you also take boron. So those are the five things I say now I believe you need to take with calcium. But that's all for today's study. It's Tuesday, actually, but it's April 9th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1739 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I'm wonderfully pleased to be with you. And I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now.